The book of Genesis, chapter 14. The book of Genesis, chapter 14. I want to read of a group of men in the Old Testament that took up their cross and followed the Lord. We don't get that expression in the Old Testament, but whether it be old or new, the principle remains. It's following the Lord means that Christ must prepare. And I want to read of a group of men that did exactly that very thing. I want you to turn first of all to the book of Genesis chapter 14. I'll not read all the passages in each case, but you can make a note of it and afterwards read it more carefully. Genesis chapter 14 and verse 17. We have the battle, the victory made by Abraham, and the return of Abraham, verse 17, and the king of Sodom went out to meet him. After his return from the slaughter of Kedorlaomer and of the kings that were with him, of the valley of Shaveh, which is the king's deal, and Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he was a priest of the Most High God. And he blessed him and said, Blessed be Abram of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thine enemies into thy hand, and he gave him tithes of all. And the king of Sodom said unto Abram. It's quite clear that the king of Sodom was out to meet him, but Melchizedek got there first. That's a good principle. The king of Sodom went out, said unto Abram, Give me the persons and take the goods to thyself. And Abram said to the king of Sodom, I have lifted up mine hand unto the Lord, the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth, that I will not take from a thread even to a shoe latchet, and that I will not take anything that is thine. Lest thou should say, I have made Abram rich. Verse 1 of chapter 13, After these things, the word of the Lord came unto Abram in a vision, saying, Fear not, Abram, I am thy shield. That was true in the battle. And I am thy exceeding great reward. That was proved afterwards in his life. Now go forward to chapter 39. Chapter 39 of the same book. Chapter 39. Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he put into his hand. Verse 6. He left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not what he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person, and well favored, and it came to pass, after these things, that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, Lie with me, for he refused. The end of verse 9. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And it came to pass that she spake with Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not on to her. Verse 11, it came to pass of at this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there. And then we have his flight, and we have him put in prison. But verse 21, the Lord was with Joseph. Now, I want you to go forward to Hebrews. And then we come back to the Old Testament. Paul's epistle to, I've said it now, Paul, whether it be here or not, Hebrews chapter 11, well, I think it was, he who wrote it. But at any rate, it was written and inspired too. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 23. By faith Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months from his parents because they saw he was a proper child. And they were not afraid of the king's commandment. By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Now go back again to the Old Testament. This time I want you to read in the first book of Kings. The first book of Kings. And we read in chapter 21. First book of Kings, chapter 21. Came to pass after these things that Naboth, the Jezreelite, had a vineyard which was in Jezreel, hard by the palace of Ahab, king of Samaria. And Ahab spake unto Naboth, saying, give me thy vineyard, that I may have it for a garden of herbs, because it is near unto my house. And I will give thee for it a better vineyard than it, or, if it seem good to thee, I will give thee the worth of it in money. Naboth said to Ahab, the Lord forbid of me that I should give the inheritance of my fathers unto thee. Ahab came into his house happy and displeased because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him, for he had said, I will not give thee the inheritance of my fathers. Now look at the book of Daniel, chapter 1. The book of Daniel, chapter 1, and we need to read verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. And go back still to the book of Ezra. The book of Ezra, chapter 4. The book of Ezra, chapter 4. Now when the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin heard that the children of the captivity builded the temple unto the Lord God of Israel, then they came to Zerubbabel and to the chief of the fathers and said unto them, let us build of you, for we seek your God as ye do, and we do sacrifice unto him since the days of Esarhaddon, king of Asher, which brought us up hither. But Zerubbabel and Jeshua and the rest of the chief of the fathers of Israel said, you have nothing to do with us, to build an house unto our God. But we ourselves together will build unto the Lord God of Israel, as King Cyrus the king of Persia hath commanded. And it's most interesting to notice how quickly the supposed friends changed. Then the people of the land weakened the hands of the people of Judah and troubled them in building. They wanted the help, and when they were not accepted, they started to trouble. So would-be helpers turned out to be true troublers. Now I want you to read another passage in Daniel chapter 3. Daniel chapter 3, verse 12. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, these men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. And of course the king makes a decree. He backs it home with a threat, and they answer. Verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee inasmuch. It's an interesting change the Revised Margin gives it. O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer thee inasmuch. If it be so, that is to say, they knew what God's word said. We have no need to answer thee, there's no answer necessary. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy God, nor worship the golden image that thou hast set up, and they were cast into the furnace, and the Lord was with them in the furnace. The Lord brought them out of the furnace, and Nebuchadnezzar made the decree. And the decree was that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, verse 28, who God had sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies. That's an interesting connection of Romans 12. I beseech you therefore by the mercies of God that you present your bodies. There's an example in the Old Testament of Romans 12 chapter 12. Young men who presented their bodies to the Lord, and they were put to a test. Now what I want to try to say a little word about this afternoon is the case of the connection between these passages. The connection between these passages is a very, an exceedingly simple one. The records of nine men, a group of six and then three, forming another group. And of these nine men, we have them men who knew how to say no. Men who knew how to say no. When I was a little fellow, I remember my mother used to teach me hymns and sometimes little couplets, and I remember one, but I can't remember it except just a word or two. And these were the words that have never left my mind. Have courage, my boy, to say no. And I would like to look this afternoon that the Lord would give us help on some of these men who had courage to say no. We have Abraham saying no to the kings of Sodom. We have Joshua, Joseph saying no to Potiphar's wife. We have Moses saying no, in all probability, first of all, to Pharaoh's daughter. But he did definitely say no to Egypt's pleasure. We have Naboth saying no to the king, to King Ahab. And we have Zerubbabel saying no to those who wanted the help in the building of the temple. And we have the three youths saying no to Nebuchadnezzar when he set up his decree. And I would also like to notice that there was something at stake in each of these cases that we mentioned, and perhaps we may experience a little bit of help to point out exactly what was at stake. Looking at Genesis chapter 14, we have the story of the capture of Lot and the defeat of the kings of Sodom. We have Abram with his own hired men going after the kings of the plain, not in company with the king of Sodom. But God gave Abram a mighty victory, and on his way back, we find that the king of Sodom goes out to meet him. But at the same time, the king Melchizedek, he also goes out to meet Abram. And as I pointed out already, it was nice to notice that Melchizedek got there first. Actually, what was at stake? Right on the face of it, there doesn't seem to be very, very much. Because Abram was entitled to the spoils. Victory were his. And the king of Sodom recognized that. He said to him, he said, the spoils are yours. And not only so, but it was from those very spoils that Abraham gave to Melchizedek the tenth of all that they had. It would indicate that Abraham did exercise a certain right, but at the same time he knew where to draw the line. And when the king of Sodom finally came to Abraham, Abraham said to the king of Sodom, I will not take from a thread even to a shoe latchet, and that I will not take anything that is thine, lest thou should say, I have made Abraham rich. What actually was at stake? I would suggest that at stake was Abraham's testimony as a pilgrim. Not only that, but at the very beginning we could also point out that in each of these cases, if you search the background, you'll notice that they were cases and people for whom God had a purpose. Each of these men were men that God had singled out already in his own pre-knowledge, men that would fill a purpose for him in this life. In other words, they were to be testimonies for the Lord. And Abraham was the first of these that we have mentioned that was chosen. And it made me think as I was sitting on my seat that God has a purpose for all of us. And we find that in Romans chapter 8, that God has a purpose for all of us, and that all things work together for good to them that know the Lord. That is to say, all things in this life that come into our lives are working out God's purpose for us. And as I listen to the appeal that has been made for that dear creature in Holland, there's no doubt about it that our hearts are stirred. And one cannot understand the reason why. But brethren and sisters, we know that there definitely must be a purpose, because God will not permit anything to hinder his child that's obedient to him fulfilling the purpose for which the Lord has brought him, has a purpose made for him, so that all things work together for good to them that know God. There was a purpose. God had called Abraham out, and he went out not knowing whither he went. It was God's mind that Abraham should become the head of a wonderful nation. Abraham didn't understand the reason why, nor could he understand how it would ever be brought about. But it would seem right here, it's not the first instance of any attempt on Satan's part with Abraham, because Abraham went down to Egypt, and God in his own marvelous way came in and saved the man from a disaster. It could have been a terrible disaster. That very wife of his that was meant to be, in God's own miraculous way, the mother of Sarah, God had ordained that. And had Abraham been permitted to carry out what he had telling a lie, it had as terrible results. You can easily see how the whole purpose of God would have been frustrated. But God is not frustrated. But in this particular case, is Abraham as a pilgrim. Had Abraham accepted what the king of Sodom offered, then the king of Sodom could have said afterwards, during all the life of this great man, not only that instant might he have said it, that I made Abraham rich, but all his lifetime through, this man could have said, it was I who made that great man what he was. So that at stake was his character as a pilgrim. Now I want you to notice that when the king of Sodom arrived, two things had happened. And those two things are seen in what Melchizedek did. First of all, he gave Abraham bread and wine. He gave him something for a tired body. And then he gave him something for a soul. And the word was this, blessed be Abraham, of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. He gave him a wee word for his soul. and he gave him a word at the same time, he gave him something for his body. Strengthened physically, now Abraham meets Sodom. And with that little word that Melchizedek had given him, he meets the king of Sodom, and he uses the very same words that Melchizedek said to him. He uses those words. He said, I have lifted up mine hand unto the Lord, the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth. God has said to him already, Blessed be Abraham of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. And so when the king of Sodom made his offer, he was able to say, I have lifted up mine hand unto the Lord, the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth, that I will not take from a thread even to a shoe latchet. I would wonder, brethren and sisters, is there a possibility at any time of us being turned aside from the path of God for material gain? I would wonder, and I will appeal to the young. I know that we are living in days that our fathers never knew, and that I and others like me, we never knew. I know we're living in days of advancement. I know that we're living in days of wonderful preparation, speaking in a secular way. I know that it's a preparation for a career in life. All these things are quite legitimate if submitted to the will of God. But there's a possibility of being turned aside from one's pilgrim pathway. God meant this man to be what he never yet had thought would be his end in life. And Satan, behind it all, was seeking to turn him to the one side. You notice in chapter 15, after these things, the word of the Lord came unto Abram in a vision, saying, Fear not, Abram, I am thy shield. Abraham had proved that. It was God that was his shield that protected him in the battle with the kings of the plain. And now says God, I am the exceeding great reward. In other words, just adopting it to the language that they can better understand. Dear Abraham, you have made a choice. You have turned down an opportunity to be made quickly rich. But wait until you see what I have in store for you. Dear brethren, remember, there's a possibility of reaching the pinnacle of prosperity and reaching it just too quickly. You may reach it at the expense of your pilgrim character. I wonder how many our brother has been making an appeal to the youth. I wonder how many are prepared to submit their path simply to the mind of the Lord. And we're not making appeal for missionaries nor for preachers, and I for one don't believe in it. And I don't do it because I believe that's a sacred thing and God only is able to put it into the heart of anyone what he means them to do in this life. But as this, I would appeal to you to submit everything that you have in this life, your ambition and everything, to this proof. What has God in mind for me? This path, this offering that's offered to me may turn me aside from my pilgrim pathway. I never cease quoting the case of Dr. Darley in the assembly from which I come in the town of Lurgan. And many, many don't know a part of the secret of the work in that city, when almost probably 100 years ago the assembly was formed, and it struggled on when the doctor about the year 1900 came to the town, and an eminent man, a professional man, a man of fame in the whole north of Ireland, a surgeon of no mean standing, threw in his lot with that tiny little assembly. And from that end, in that assembly, he worked to help. He followed his career as a surgeon. But he never ceased his activities in the meeting. He always was helpful. But he was dying from cancer in the year 1927. Probably 26. We visited him, conference time, as he lay on his bed in pain, asking about the conference. His heart was there, but a son of his had come from the Argentine to visit his father. And one day, lying on the foot of the bed, they took him to his dear father. The father revealed to the boy, to a man, the secret. He said, "People ask, why did I stay in this little town, where I have operated by candlelight, where at times I have had to support the administration of the hospital out of my own pocket, when I might have been enjoying fame in other parts? Why did I do it?" And he said, "I want to tell you something that has been a secret. When you were all small, and I was in need, and your dear mother was in need, and the education of my boys was lying before me, and I wondered what I was going to do," he said, "I received an offer from one of the biggest hospitals in the city of London, offering me a position which was going to bring to me wealth and honor, and to your mother prosperity and comforts." He said, "I got that letter. I was in time to answer it immediately. This is from the Lord." But he said, "I took it into my bedroom. Would to God we could get young people on their knees. Would to God we could get you on your knees. That's where you need to be. I have no difficulty whatsoever in trying to help young people, but I believe we would need to get them on their knees before their God." The doctor got on his knees with the letter before him, and he told the story afterwards. He said, "As I put the letter there, and I read the letter, I asked myself a question, what shall I do?" There, he said, I began to answer, "If I accept this position, I will prosper. I will prosper, my family will prosper, I will get a name. But the assembly will suffer. If I reject this offer," he said, "I will suffer, my family may suffer, the assembly will prosper." And he said to his son, he said, "Nigel," that was his son's name, still lives in the Argentine, an old man, said, "Nigel, I decided. I threw the lot in with God. I threw the lot in with God. I suffered," he said. "I'm dying. I have no fortune to leave behind for my family." He died a poor man. But brethren, out of that assembly went no less than 20 men into all parts of the world. I believe at the judgment seat of Christ, God will give the crown to the man that paid the price. We know nothing, whatsoever nothing, about the service of God and sacrifice at the same time. Our talk is glib. That's just about the whole business. Ministry, 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 and all the rest of it, and we're not getting down to heart work before the Lord. Oh, may God stir up our hearts today to be like Abraham, to say no. I want to look at Joseph for a moment, and Joseph said no. We needn't go into that case. In fact, there's a contrast. You look at chapter 38. If ever you read, I question, if there's a book that deals with immorality, even today, that deals with a worse case than what we have in chapter 38, I question it in the book of Holy Scripture, the pages black with immorality, right in the home of this dear lad. No wonder his father said in chapter 49, Joseph separated from his brethren. Ah, Jacob realized what was going on, but he wasn't able to stem the tide. But the dear boy, he was able. Joseph, rather, was sold as a slave. And he was tempted in a way but very few could really stand. But I want you to notice what he said. He said to that woman, he said, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against the Lord? How did he know that it was sin against the Lord? The book of Exodus had not yet been written. The law had not yet been given, which deals with immorality, which deals with adultery, and which deals with thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. That was not yet written. How did Joseph know it was against the Lord? I believe that he went back to Genesis chapter 2, where God had taught in the question of Adam and Eve, the question of the relationships that should exist, and where they should exist, between the sexes, that a man should have his own wife. I don't care what they teach in modern 1980. I don't care what they say. I say this. This type of sin is wickedness. It's wickedness, no matter what form it takes. It may be a permissive age, but may God keep our young people from being contaminated in this permissive age by the conscience being lulled to think, I can do this and it's not too bad after all. It's wickedness. It's sin against the Lord. And Joseph said no. He just said no. It's not hard to say no. And brethren, somehow I know there's a moment when it's difficult, but somehow, when that moment is reached, the victory's won. Joseph ran from the house. He was put into prison. About 20 years were allowed to pass until God brought it all to light and Joseph was raised to where God meant. What was at stake? God's purposes. It was God's mind to use Joseph in the land of Egypt to bring his people, to sustain his people, and when the time came for Moses to bring them out of the land of Egypt. God had that in mind. Satan had that in mind too. He tried to turn him aside. When he come to Moses, and I've already made reference to it, Moses was able to say no to the pressures of this world. It was an easy life. A life of self-indulgence. Low probability being called the king, son of the king's daughter. It may be that he had to say to her no, because he was her adopted son. It's not likely that what he did was done behind her back. Must have been a tremendous critical moment in the life of Moses when he stood and he said, no, I can't be the son of Pharaoh's daughter. What will it mean? I don't know. It may mean that I'm going to be thrown in with the rest of my people. Instead of being a ruler, I'd just be a brickmaker, but I can't do it. He said no. He was conscious that God's honor was at stake. Oh, young brethren, this afternoon, if only we could get you there to look at things in the light of eternity. How many they are grasped, and the grasp of that fist that closes so tightly on prosperity, and they never take into account what it's going to mean in the path, their own Christian path. The dear Dr. Downing counted the cost and suffered during his lifetime a certain amount of privation, but God didn't forget him, and I've omitted to say that. Every one of his children rose that to the very highest possible for any person to rise in this world and yet maintain their stability. Is it any wonder that some of us are carried away? The Lord knows I owe too much through the benevolence of God's people to criticize him. And I'm not criticizing him, but I do say this, that I fear that many of our young people don't understand what it means, that it takes a steady hand to carry a full cup. The cup becomes so full, it carries them away altogether. I want you to turn quickly, and I am not conscious of the time, in the book of 1 Kings, chapter 21. You find here that this king says no to Naboth. He had a vineyard, chapter 21. He had a vineyard, and it's interesting that it adjoined the property of the king of Israel. And the king put his eye upon it, and he said to him that he wanted it. That if he would just give it to him, he would give him the value of it. And Naboth said no. Why did he say no? What was involved? Well, according to the law, Israel were not to sell their possessions. It was only a vineyard. In the days of David, there were certain men who defended a little parcel of ground where a few lentils had been sown. Didn't seem to be very much, but it belonged to David. And here's a vineyard belongs to the Lord. The king says, I'll give you a better garden. What a temptation. A better garden. He wouldn't sell his inheritance. How many there are in the little house in which they live beside the assembly, and where there's such a blessing, to rise up and leave it, away they go, and you don't know where they are. Surely, surely, brethren, there ought to be some little exercise, what is my inheritance? And in connection with the assembly, I would say, not today, I know a sister in the name of the Lord, in the north of Ireland, who paid a heavy price for what our brother was telling us in connection with obeying the Lord in baptism away in the north of the country, in County Derry. A member of a very, very, not a very wealthy family, but a family of noble background. A lady born by not rolling in wealth. She heard the gospel. She got salvation. She heard that the Christians were meeting in a little shack. One Sunday morning, she left her home, and the father said, where are you going? She said, I'm going to the little meeting. Dear lady born, walk for miles and then walk through muddy fields to reach the wee hall. And she started to break bread. God blessed her husband, blessed her family. I was talking to her grandchildren, rolling in wealth, and I reminded them the price that the grandmother paid. Those dear children are selling cheaply the truth that the grandmother bought at such a heavy price. Oh, the inheritance of the little assembly, how quickly it sold. He said, I'll not sell it. And he didn't sell it. He wasn't prepared to give up his inheritance. Then I want you to notice in Zerubbabel. And again, one would ask the question, why? Why did Zerubbabel say no to these people? What harm was it? They wanted to help them to build. That's a good work. Can't we all build together? It's a big work you're doing, Zerubbabel. It is. You need help. I do. We'll help you. No, you're not. Why? Well, the reason was this. He said, you have nothing to do with us. And if you want to know why, I'll not ask at the moment. You turn to 2 Kings chapter 17 and you'll find the reason why. That after the Assyrians had taken Israel into captivity, then they took some from Assyria in these parts and they transplanted them into the cities of Samaria. So that these people had no connection whatsoever by birth with Israel, yet they wanted to help in the building of the temple. And Zerubbabel said, you have nothing to do with them. What was at stake? It was God's work was at stake. God's work must be done in God's way. And while we're very, very happy at the preaching of the gospel. Brethren, I think after the truths that we have been listening to as to concerning the church testimony, I would say that we ought to understand that God's work is done in God's way. And in what is called a united campaign, and we appreciate the fact when the gospel is preached, but supposing that in this campaign there are different persons taking part, leading part, and when it's all over and the converts are counted, where do they, what are they taught? Each one is sent to the church of his own church. Each one has before him where he came from. There's not the teaching of the New Testament. And I would say to you, younger men that are here today with a desire to preach the gospel, remember that in the presentation of the gospel, there is a desire to build up the assembly of which you form a part, or else the establishing of a new work altogether. God's work must be done in God's way, and they wanted to help. We have passed through this experience, that's why we speak. We didn't go into detail. We have had our invitations. We have had to take our stand, even in the street where we live. But God has given grace. We must do it in God's way. Yet not, he said no. In connection with God's service, Zerubbabel was able to say no. And may the Lord keep his people in the assembly. We have had to suffer in some degree in Venezuela unfair criticism from quarters from which we wouldn't have expected it, for the simple reason we haven't felt free to go in with every mass movement that has visited the country. We have our convictions, and we've tried to teach what we were taught. And I would say, brethren, there are moments when we've got to say no. And the last is the I passed over the question of Daniel. God's purposes were at stake there, because God was going to use Daniel in bringing the people out of the land of Babylon. And now, in connection with his food, Daniel was able to say no. He realized, if I'm not careful, I'll be contaminated in this place. He was far from home, he ran in a strange land, but he had purpose in his heart. Oh, I believe that Daniel's purpose of heart was made when he was still in the land of Judah. I believe that. I believe that before that Nebuchadnezzar had taken him captive, that Daniel had come to his conclusion, I'm going to be carried away. I'm going down to Babylon, in all probability, and in that land I'm going to be tested, but by God's grace, I'm going to say no. And he was tested, and when the time came for his food, he preferred the pulse, and he preferred the water to the food on the king's table. The pulse and water would speak to you and me of that fare upon which the Christians can flourish, the word of God in all the simplicity. And may I just say a little word in connection with the possibility of literature. I question very much if all the literature that we are buying deserves to be fully read. I'm not speaking of what Mr. Funson has. Don't misunderstand. But I remember one conference in Venezuela, and I was so ill I couldn't buy the books that we needed for the conference. I asked some young men if they would please bring me a selection. And they were good young men. They brought me a selection from Caracas, the capital. And I must confess I was shocked. Under the name of religion, what young people ought to know, paperbacks with a nice cover, but the interior just tended to feeding the most lowest and sinful lust as possible to originate in the heart of any creature. And that's the kind of literature that's being sold wholesale today in religious quarters, and our young people are taught that's what they ought to read. Daniel said, no, I'll not take it. And he didn't. But many of the young men in the land did take it, and we know the result. They're never mentioned afterwards. Then you come to the three youths, and when they were faced with the problem, they just said to the king, we don't need to answer. We don't need to answer our minds made up. We're not going to disobey God in connection with our worship. We're just going to say no. And they said no. And they were cast into the furnace, but God brought them out. Dear brethren, may God help us this afternoon to have courage to say no for His name's sake.